The First Serve, talking tennis for AFT Hire. For all your temporary fencing and portable toilet hire, call 1-300-946-660 or log on to afthire.com.au on 1116 SEN.
Very good evening to you and welcome one and all to The First Serve. This is your one-stop shop for all things tennis. And, of course, it is a big week, or couple of weeks that we have with the All England Club flocking with crowds there, and maybe actually some clouds at the moment, as I welcome Paul Aiken in our co-host chair. Paul, good evening to you.
Good evening, Sean, and to all the listeners. And my, are we in the peak of an all the Aussie matches at the moment, aren't we, really? There's so much going on, and it's a very exciting show we have lined up tonight, mate.
Yeah, absolutely. We're going to be crossing to Brett Phillips very soon. Of course, he's over there at Wimbledon enjoying all the fun and frivolity over there, but he wouldn't be enjoying too much at the moment on the outdoor courts with play suspended, it looks. We'll just see very much in a moment if Brett is with us. But Paul, how have you seen the first couple of days of the tournament? Some sleepless nights, of course.
Absolutely. Well, look, I mean, there's just so many matches that we could get through. I mean, Kyrgios and Stepanek last night, that was so exciting. And right at the moment, obviously, we're in the middle of Fernando Verdasco and Bernard Tomic poised at two sets all. And can Bernie sort of serve this one out? I tend to think he will.
What's that final set score for those that are in their cars? And
5-3, and Verdasco's coming out to serve. Then the other one we're keeping a very close eye on is Matthew Barton versus Albano Olivetti.
You've got a lot to talk about with Matthew Barton, you and BP. He's a favourite player of yours, isn't he?
Well, we like to have claimed Matt Barton. We got on very early, Sean.
Now, remember, of course, to call and text in during the show, 94291116, or SMS 043398116 for your chance to win a family pass for an Australian Open guided tour at Melbourne Park, thanks to Tennis World. You too can have a Grand Slam experience with Tennis World, court hire, coaching, function rooms, and more for all things tennis. Visit tennisworld.net.au. We'll cross to Brett Phillips in a little moment. But he is ready to go. So Brett Phillips, are you there with us?
Sean, Paul, good evening, guys. How are we?
Good evening, BP.
How's it all going over there, my friend?
Well, I'd love to say the weather is magnificent, but unfortunately it's a pretty ordinary London day. Guys, only a top today of 17. We've been on and off, and I do feel for the fans because they do queue up here. I mean, the grounds are packed, and then you've got sort of the non-ticket holders, and it's quite amazing. They queue up at sort of Wimbledon Park. They pitch tents, and they're not guaranteed to actually get in. And this queue, you have to see it to believe it. Guys, it goes for absolute miles, and they queue up hoping they might actually get in when the ticket holders, after 5 o'clock, some of them say, look, I've had a good day at the tennis, so I'm going to go home, and then they let a few more in. Now, it's obviously a little bit tighter, the grounds here, in how many they can actually fit in. I think around 43,000 is the capacity. There isn't quite the sort of the seatage numbers around the outside courts like we'd have at Melbourne Park, but look, it's for the two of the Australians. You wonder what the end result is going to be. I mean, they both look to be in a really good position here. Tomic at 5-3. He played a really long eighth game of that match, and then the covers had to come on. He didn't want to go off the court, Bernard. He knew he was only a game away, but obviously all the other courts were being covered. And, yeah, Matthew Barton, Sean. Look, Paul and I are on him. I went out to Roehampton to watch his final qualifying match, and we spoke to him over the weekend here. What a great story. I mean, he was sixth in line in the alternates to get into qualies, so he wasn't even guaranteed. Got a last minute call up, wins three tough matches, beats the world number 100, he's at 273, and in a really tight battle with Olivetti, a fellow qualifier from France, came out in a tough situation today at 5-all in that second set tiebreaker. Anticipated beautifully the forehand cross court, a fair bit of energy there, and then quickly won the third set, which only went about 25-30 minutes. So he looks like he's in a really good position. And Paul, you are a fan. He just looks hungry to me. A young guy who's going, Jim, I believe in my ability. My body's now sound. I reckon I can make a real imprint on this tour at 24 years of age. And he's up and about.
Well, so he should. I mean, he's about 6'4". He can do amazing things with the ball. He hits the ball with just incredible velocity. Look, down a set and then five all in the tiebreak. If there was anyone that I'd love to come out and play 2 points for me, it'd be Matt Barton, because yep. he just you just set the scene beautifully. That's exactly what he would do at five all. I think he is set to perhaps go places. Set the scene over there, BP. Is it a day that's coming over with bands, with the showers? Is it like a Melbourne day that you just say, no, forget it, nothing's going to happen? What's your gut feel?
Yeah, the call at the moment is that no play will be before 11:30 your time, so 2:30 over here in the UK. The covers are on all the outside courts at the moment, so they'll reassess, look at the conditions. But we are being told it's one of those days where it's just going to be different bands of rain coming in, mainly from the north, up around Scotland and coming across from sort of Ireland, drifting down all the way to London. So, yeah, it's going to be one of those sort of on and off days. Frustrating for the spectators, for the players, just the other matches that are going on as we speak. Obviously, centre court is not affected, and Agnieszka Radwanska is going to power to victory. She's on the verge of winning here in straight sets. Dominic Thiem, who we love talking about, what a year he's had. He's won more matches on the tour than anyone else. Playing Florian Mayer of Germany, and they met, of course, in the final of Halle recently, where Mayer, 10 years his senior, was able to upstage him. So that one is locked at 4-4 in the opening set. That'll be a really good match.
Absolutely.
Isner and Baghdatis have just got underway. That should be one of the matches, certainly, of the day. And Alexander Zverev, one of the many young players that we love talking about, he is in the box seat against one of the veterans, Paul-Henri Mathieu, 6-3, 6-4, 3 love. So he is progressing nicely. 24th seed here, and he's coming in a big way, as we know, towards that top 20 at such a young age. So, yeah, there's some of the sort of the feature matches going on. But, hey, later on, on centre court, one match that's guaranteed today.
I know
it's
where you're
going. Probably been the story. It's been the story of the tournament.
Because
England knocked out by Iceland, so Roy's resigned. They're in, you know, crisis over here. The whole EU and the vote there, and a lot of people regretting deciding to leave the EU. But Marcus Willis, had you ever heard of him, Paul? I mean, you're across all your tennis players. Had you ever heard of Marcus Willis?
Well, I've been digging around, BP, and Linda Pierce from The Age actually put in a very good story today. But this guy, you know, all that's been said about him, club pro at the Warwick Boat Club.
That's right.
You know, he was in 30,000...
The very prestigious Warwick Boat Club.
Yeah, and there's some footage of him playing a Challenger tournament in the States, and he's tucking into a chocolate bar, an RC Cola, which is probably about the worst thing you could possibly put into your body. That's, I mean, he set sports science back 100 years with doing that. But
do you think that was a bit of a ploy to his opponent? Maybe he had a sports drink inside, and maybe that was a power bar that was just covered in a Mars bar wrapper or something like
that. The footage that is. I mean, he would have to have been 10, 15 kilos overweight easily.
He was a big boy.
Yeah. And, you know, to do what he's done this week, and he had the nickname Cartman from South Park, would you believe?
Well, it's an amazing story. He's had to go through pre-qualies and then qualifying, wins his first round match against Berankis. That was out on court 17. You should have heard the noise when he won. He had a group of mates courtside. His girlfriend wasn't supposed to be there, and something happened at work that allowed her to get there and watch him. And now it's a bit like Wimbledon the movie. It's David and Goliath. He now realizes his dream, not only of playing on centre court, but he's playing arguably the greatest of all time. And Roger Federer actually had some great things to say about it yesterday. He thought, well, look, at this stage of my career, 34, I'm rapt to be part of something like this. So, yeah, it's going to be...
He is literally playing
an amazing
love
match later on.
Well, just on that, let's hear from Roger Federer. He is the story of the tournament so far in Marcus Willis, and even the great man is fascinated about the story of this young man.
I even saw him in my section of the draw, and then I heard more about it, and I think it's one of the best stories in a long time in our sport, you know, other than Djokovic winning slams and, you know, Rafa doing a good comeback and Murray playing great. So this is the kind of stories we need in our sport. I think it's a great, great story, and I'm very excited to be playing him, actually. So it's not something that I get to do very often.
Well, of course, Brett Phillips is brought to us by AFT Hire. For all your temporary fencing and portable toilet hire, call 1300 946 660 or head to afthire.com.au. Brett, a lot to get through today. We had 28 matches that were, of course, postponed to today, but it's going to be very interesting to see how the scheduling is going to work later on. Of course, as you said, centre court is unaffected and it looks as if Radvanska has progressed quite easily through to the next round, but they'll still be trucking along on centre court.
Yeah, look, they certainly will. So centre court won't be affected, and Radvanska does get through, as predicted, fairly comfortably. But there have been plenty of talking points, hasn't there, guys, over the last two or three days?
Just on the, BP, the Marcus Willis one, they asked him in the interview, they said, look, have you met Federer before? And he said, well, I haven't seen him around any futures tournaments in Tunisia.
Yeah, well, it was a very interesting media conference. Obviously, you know, Marcus hasn't done a lot of this sort of stuff, and you know, he was asked a hell of a lot of questions and handled himself beautifully. A real cool cat, but what an occasion.
And he just candidly said, well, look, you know, I'm living the dream. I'm living in my parents' house, and things are going well.
These are the stories, Paul. I mean, you know, you've travelled around and you've been on the futures and the challenges. You've worked with players at the lower levels. I mean, sometimes you just need a little bit of luck, don't you, with your body. I mean, everyone can play. I mean,
well,
you go,
I think,
and watch
that's
any
why
level of
hang
tennis
in there that for these long periods. And it is, I mean, I know a lot of Melbourne local players, you know, are buzzing talking about this guy.
Hmm. Yeah, that's a really good story. And look, you know, hopefully a little bit of inspiration. And when we spoke to Matty Barton a couple of days ago, you know, he had to put down the racket a couple of years ago. He wasn't making any money out of the sport. You know, injuries had set in. Yeah, he didn't have a lot of confidence, and then just got himself into the right frame of mind, knowing in the back of his mind that he could play. And, you know, his serve obviously is a huge asset for him, and it's going to give him a lot of free points. His forehand today against Olivetti has been absolutely superb. So he's a big chance, two sets to one up. And, you know, I think he can certainly track, if he can play some good continuous tennis in the second half of the year, I think can certainly track towards that top 100.
Well, that's right. And, I mean, $100,000 in the bank for someone like Matt Barton and, indeed, Marcus Willis goes a long way in helping their careers.
Absolutely. Hey, after
and
the break, Shawnee, Barry Cowan has stepped in alongside me, so I'll have a chat to him after the break here in our box, because he I reckon, could relate really well to the Marcus Willis story and can give us a little bit of insight into that, and obviously discuss just, I suppose, Wimbledon here and what it means to him, and he's doing commentary these days, because for me and for many of the journalists that come here, it is just an absolute privilege, I've got to say, to come to a place like this.
Well, yeah, absolutely. As you said, we will speak to Barry Cowan, obviously a famous story, and it's going to be great to see, hear what he has to say about that infamous day, Paul, back in 2001.
Yes.
We were just having a look at it before where he took the...
I can remember that match.
The four, yeah, can you? Well, I was saying that I can remember it, taking some days off school to watch Wimbledon in the wee hours of the morning, but... That Wimbledon update, of course, was brought to us by Jets 24-Hour Fitness. No locking contracts. Log on to jets.com.au to become a member today. As Brett said, he'll be with us at the back of this. But as we go to the break, it is the unbelievable story in Marcus Willis, and he's emerged as one of the hot topics of Wimbledon, and the world number 772 had this to say about his upcoming opponent, Roger Federer.
Well, I'm not sure he can play on grass. That's good. obviously it's amazing. Dream come true. I get to play on a stadium court, and this is what I dreamed of when I was younger. And yeah, I'm going to go out there and try and win the tennis match. I probably won't. I might not, but I'm still going to give everything.
It is 24 minutes past 11. You're listening to The First Serve. Sean Manawira and Paul Aiken in the studio here in Melbourne, but over similar temperatures over in London, of course, is Brett Phillips. Brett, are you still with us? You've got a special guest with you.
Certainly have. Sean, his name is Barry Cowan. He's doing some work here for Live at Wimbledon, which is an outstanding radio service here. And if you are back in Melbourne and can download the Wimbledon app, you can listen to the radio service, which is like a little in-house radio station. It's absolutely brilliant.
Of course, all of our listeners will be doing after the first serve tonight.
Thank you very much. Also does some great work for Sky Sports. But played, of course, back in his day, and you did mention that match taking Pete Sampras to five sets at Wimbledon in 2001. And, well, I suppose you can relate a bit to Marcus Willis because it's not always easy on the tour. Barry, great to spend some time with you.
Yeah, good afternoon, good evening, guys, back in Melbourne and Australia.
Indeed, nice to have you. Nice to have you on the show. And Marcus Willis, it is a really big story, isn't it? Because no one expected him to be in the main draw, and here he is with
it's
a
fairy
date.
Tale, isn't it?
Here he is with a date with Roger Federer, the greatest of all time. And can you imagine what would be going through his preparation the last sort of 24 hours? Just his mind, knowing that he is the absolute rank underdog. How does he go about it? What an occasion!
It is an incredible achievement, really, what Marcus has been able to do. And I think the hardest part was probably he was shattered last night with all the media commitments he had to do Tuesday. Played his first match Monday, but yesterday, loads of media commitments, even had to spend 5 minutes with me. But I think what's been so nice is it's just sort of a fairy tale story that people can kind of relate to what the mistakes he's made along the way. Yep. Sort of having too many pints as a teenager and not really dedicating himself. He openly admitted after his match on Monday, his win, that he was a bit of a loser. But he's kind of realised that, well, he's actually a pro player and he has some talent. Yep. And now he can just go out there. I mean, it's the old cliche, but he literally has nothing to lose.
Absolutely. And we'll get to obviously that match a little bit later on the day. Novak Djokovic is going to be playing beforehand. But just goes to show, before I let Paul and Sean fire a few questions at you, that, you know, for those of us that follow the game and all the players that are ranked all the way down outside 1,000, all the way down to 1,500, you know, it's a long, hard journey, but you can get there if you can have a bit of self-belief and a bit of persistence. We're seeing a few Australians develop, you know, in their mid to late 20s. Once upon a time, you know, players were maybe developing early. I suppose you get spoiled on different occasions, like Federer and Nadal, who just come in straight away and have great success. But for a lot of players, they don't get a chance to blossom till later on, and if you can stick at it, there is, you know, some success to be gained on the tour.
Well, I think you just get battered, really, and Marcus, like a lot of players, was a very talented junior, and certainly in Britain, the Federation had high hopes for Marcus, and he often frustrated because he wasn't able to commit day in, day out, and that's what it's like, this sport. I mean, you can't have 5 good days and 2 bad days, because the 2 bad days will catch up with you.
Yep.
And every single tournament, I mean, even here at Wimbledon, there's only going to be one guy who's happy, or in the women's, there's only going to be one woman that's happy. Yeah, that's 127 right. Are going to walk away miserable.
Yeah.
And it's how you cope with those disappointments. And yeah, it's a big bad world, the futures. You get very little money. Everyone's trying to gun for the same thing, which is get enough ranking points to get up into the next level.
Yep.
And it takes a real special character, and you do lose a lot of players along the way, especially when they're not actually used to losing as a junior.
Mm.
And I think Marcus is a classic example of that. And thankfully, he's been able to dedicate himself a bit more to the sport. And I think he's going to perform this afternoon. I wouldn't be surprised if he might even take Roger to a tiebreak in one of the 3 sets.
There you go. I'm looking forward to seeing that. Sean, Paul, got a question there for Barry?
Yeah, Barry, look, the reality for Marcus is all the great things he's doing this week is that next week he will be back in futures and challenger land, if you like, and you know, he's going to have to perform. How do you see him backing that up now? Do you think he's going to go away with it and this is the defining moment for him?
Well, I've actually heard he's got a commitment tomorrow. He's got an exhibition.
Is that right?
Yeah, he's probably going to be paid a couple of hundred quid or something, which is a bit different from the 50,000 he's going to pick up with his paycheck this week. But I think it's a really good question, and it's going to be hard. I mean, let's be honest. Grass can cover your weaknesses.
Mm.
It is a leveller. Marcus has a sort of style that is a little funky, actually. When you look at Mannarino, who's just walked down on centre court now, is a little bit different. And, you know, for that grass definitely brings the best out of Marcus. But he's got some foundations, guys, that he can build on. He's got some money, which helps relieve the pressure. I mean, he was talking yesterday that he played a futures event where I think he made the final of the singles and he won the doubles and he actually came out with $60. Because wow. By the time you've paid your accommodation, yes, your food and your hotel, and that is really hard. And that's one of the reasons why he sort of turned to coaching, because he said every week that I went out on tour, I was out of pocket.
Well, I remember Sam Groth told a story who we know quite well, the three of us here, and he was in a fair bit of debt, Grothy. He made the first round of Australian Open, I think, pocketed about $20,000. By the time he paid his hotel expenses, paid a bit of debt that he owed, and a few other costs, he was left with next to nothing, because that is how hard it is.
I mean, and I don't know how you guys are in Australia, but a lot of British players get a lot of criticism in Britain because they receive a check for Wimbledon for $30,000, and the headline is $30,000 for a loser in a first round. Mm. But the years and years and years you've had to dedicate yourself, and that year you might come in having only earned a couple of thousand quid. Well, you don't. I mean, I'm no mathematician genius, but that's not a lot of money in the first 5 months when you think how much travelling and what it does is it keeps you, as I said, it keeps you playing for the next year.
Yep.
And if we're trying to, we're saying, well, Marcus Willis is not going to be top 100, then you basically, your bottom of your pyramid is so small. And it's why, I mean, I feel it's a bit of a shame, you know, even though I'm a member of the club and I think Wimbledon are doing an incredible job. I think it's a shame we don't use all our wild cards. And we have a very small talent pool to choose from. And Marcus was going to be one of those few players that were going to quit after Wimbledon.
And Barry, just could you tell us about, you know, the expectations of the locals on British players, and you were obviously in this situation yourself. How did you deal with the hysteria and the pressure of going out there?
Well, the pressure for me was totally different to the pressure for Tim Hemman and Andy that he has to cope with now, because they expected to do great, and the public expected them to do great. For me, there was no pressure. Honestly, was no pressure, because this was fun. If a British player can't perform at Wimbledon, then I'm not necessarily sure that they should be playing, because you're getting your biggest paycheck. You're playing in front of thousands of people. You get spoilt. The hardest part is playing in Timbuktu when you've got a couple of officials, and you've got maybe a linesman who in the morning has been, you know, delivering the milk or something, you know. It's kind of like they're doing it as the hobby, and that was the hardest part. And, you know, traveling from continent to continent, but to be a part of an event like this, it was the same, you know, in Australia. To be part of that, that's what you play the sport for.
No doubt. We're talking to Barry Cowan, a former British tennis player, of course, who, well, took Pete Sampras to 5 sets at Wimbledon back in 2001. He's commentating here for Live at Wimbledon Radio. Also does some work for Sky Sports. Shawnee, you got something back there?
Yeah, I just wanted a follow-up on that one. Paul thankfully brought up the Pete Sampras match, Barry. And the reason why I wanted to bring that up as well, just looking at the score, you were 2 sets to love down in that. And I know that you said that Marcus is going to go into this with nothing to lose at all, possibly or hopefully for some of the Brit fans over there to maybe take one of the sets at least to a tie break or just make it a real entertaining match. But what were you, if you can remember, what were your thoughts going into that third set when you were 2 sets to love down? Did you just really have that mentality of you have nothing to lose and you're going to leave it all on the court?
I had nothing to lose right from the word go, and that's the honest truth. I actually only have really a couple of regrets from the whole match, and I'll talk about that in a minute. But, you know, going into that match with Pete, I was actually struggling a couple of weeks before, mentally, and, you know, putting a lot of pressure on myself. But physically, I was in the best shape that I ever had been. I played against Pete on court one, which was actually a benefit for me. I didn't want to play on centre because I'd been involved in the Davis Cup tie for Britain. Unfortunately, it was the year before against Ecuador when we lost. And it was on court one. And although I didn't play competitively in that match, I'd spent the whole week practicing on court one. So I felt that I would adjust quicker to the court one environment as opposed to centre court, where it can overwhelm you because of the history that is this famous court. But the first 2 sets I played well. I felt good in myself, although obviously the scoreline suggested it was one-way traffic. The only thing I was struggling with was with my serve. Again, something you're not used to on the tour, but playing in a stadium there's a bowl, the wind was swirling. So once I started to get a bit of rhythm on my serve, and in the third set I sort of started, and I said, well, let's just hold my first service game and then let's hold my second service game. I mean, it sounds very simple, but that's all I was saying to myself. And then when I got to the tie break, honest truth, I said I'm going to swing as hard as I can.
Yep.
I mean, it's almost like 2020. You know, you get to the final over, yeah. You can have six hits, and sometimes you get lucky, sometimes you get bowled the first ball. But I said I'm going to be in control of my own destiny. And if I hit a double fault trying to hit a big second serve, so be it. Because the last thing I wanted to do was walk off saying I was a bit of a limp, tame tiebreak. And then I won that third set, played the best tiebreak I've ever played. And then the adrenaline just carried through in the fourth. I played an amazing set. But the two regrets I had, I just pushed a couple of volleys the first game of the fifth on my serve. Not good enough. I made them, but that gave Sampras time. And because I was so worried about myself and not losing focus, I actually didn't realize how rattled at times Pete was a little bit at the end of the fourth set. Mm. I mean, I'm not saying it would have changed the match, but it just, I think when you know your opponent is struggling, whatever sport, if you know that they are not feeling 100%, sometimes that can give you a psychological boost.
This is the 130th edition of Wimbledon. My third time here, and it is a special place. It just oozes history and tradition, and there's that aura when you walk through the gate. You're a member here of the All England Club. Give us your take on what Wimbledon sort of means to you and to the British people here, because for those that haven't been, it's really nestled into this sort of village. You've got Wimbledon Park opposite where they pitch the tents. It's quite a sort of a prestigious sort of area, and generally speaking, for the 50-odd weeks of the year, it's fairly quiet because there's not too many members. It's fairly a big honour to be a member here, but for 2 weeks, it just comes alive, this whole area.
It's so unique, and as you know, as you were saying, I'm fortunate that I am a member, and a week after the championships, I'll be able to play on the grass courts. Not Centaur 1, mind you, but you could turn up and play on court 2 and play with a friend or play with my wife or whatever. And that's nice. But I've always said that it's the same atmosphere whether you walk into the grounds here on a very cold, and we have a lot of cold December mornings, I assure you that, or whether it be when you walk in for the 2 weeks of the tournament when you've got 38,000, 39,000 in the grounds. It is special, and Wimbledon has been, I think, very shrewd in being able to move forward with the times, but also keep that little bit of the sense of it's unique, history, and not sort of go too much with the commercial side of it.
Speaking to, of course, Barry Cowan and Brett Phillips over in Wimbledon. Gents, we have to head to our second break of the evening, but we'll speak to you on the other side of this. You're, of course, listening to The First Serve on 1116 SEN, Melbourne's home of sport. You're listening to The First Serve. Sean Manawira, Paul Aiken in our Melbourne studio, Brett Phillips and Barry Cowan, our special guest, working for Sky Sports, but, of course, a former player. We're just chatting to him a little bit earlier, talking about his famous run-in with Pete Sampras at the 2001 Wimbledon Championships. But, of course, we also want to get your thoughts. I'm just looking on our screens at the moment, Brett and Barry, our fanatics over there, creating a little bit of entertainment, hopefully, for everyone out there. What have been your thoughts about the crowds? I know, obviously, there's not too much going on the outdoor courts at the moment, but a little bit more on the crowds.
Well, Barry, I want to ask you, now, I'm not necessarily a massive fan, I have to be honest, of the fanatics, but people can take them or leave them. They do look a bit odd to me here at Wimbledon.
Life would be boring if everyone was the same.
No, that's a good point. Yeah. But I love the look on people's faces who are sitting courtside when the fanatics start getting into a bit of tune, who haven't been used to the fanatics, and it's some interesting looks. What are they actually singing?
What? I thought you were going to tell me that.
Well, I don't know.
Is that not repeatable on air?
No, probably not. Probably
unlike
not.
What Kyrgios said, I'm not going to repeat that on air from yesterday.
Maybe describe the crowds here, because it's a totally different feel for me to the Australian Open. But the sort of people that come here, because they have to go into a ballot to get tickets, and then there's this huge queue that is a mile long who are trying to get in just to get a little glimpse at Wimbledon if they come in for an hour, possibly late in the day. They're not easy to get.
No, I mean, you've got, I think, the two types of fans. And you've got certainly a lot of in the centre court and court one that will be fortunate to get their tickets through their clubs. Some will get them through the public ballot. And then the people who queue up, who aren't necessarily diehard tennis fans. I mean, there's some are that love tennis, but it's more that they want to be involved in the experience. I mean, some people, I think, have more interest in actually queuing up than they have actually coming to watch the tennis.
Yep.
And then you get the people who, like the fanatics, who will queue up for 24 hours because they want tickets for the centre court or court one. And, you know, I mean, it is amazing. I mean, if you happen to go to the park where they start queuing up and they pitch their tent, I mean, it is like... It's like a party.
It's like another city.
Yeah, I mean, they've
got catering out there. Yeah, they're well equipped.
The full works. I mean, I haven't yet been brave enough to say, oh, I'll do one of those nights, but you know, I've been spoiled too much.
Yeah, boys? It's interesting, Barry, because I was lucky enough to interview John McCurdy, a former player. He went to Wimbledon in the fourth round a fair few years ago in the 70s, I think it was. If it was any later, I do apologise to him.
It was 1983, actually.
But, yeah, so he was chatting about the atmosphere and talking about the queue and saying that it's not really a negative as such. It is very much not a tourist attraction, it's probably the wrong phrase, but very much like a unique aspect of the tournament. I mean, if we have long queues down here at the Australian Open, that's very much a call to the ticketing outlets and complaining. But over there, it is really much a big part of the tournament.
And no one's pushing in either. You know, they get their number,
yep.
Whether it be you're 20th in the queue or whether you're 2,044, and you respect that.
And I was observing it yesterday, and then there's people coming along. I mean, they're giving out food. There's some, you know, a cup of coffee, sir, just while you're queuing up, just to keep you hydrated. There's little activation spots along the way where they can sort of deviate if the queue's not moving and get involved in this or that. So, yeah.
But years ago, I don't know if you were here, Brad. I can't forgive me when they last did it, but the queue used to be on the road. So you used to have the public, and you'd often have families. There'd be families of four or five, and they'd pitch their tent on the side of the road. And God heavens, if you had one of those days where it rained and rained and rained.
Absolutely.
Yeah, they were brave.
Now, boys, just a quick update here. Paul, before you jump in, I can tell you rain still falling, so the match is still suspended here on the outside courts. Bernard Tomic 5-3 up against Fedesco, of course, in the fifth set. Matthew Barton, a set apiece two sets to one now against Olivetti, fellow qualifier. They're the two Aussies. Stows are a little bit later on, but unfortunately the heavens have opened. Paul?
Now, Barry, if you can cast your mind back to 2004, there was a movie made. And I think you'll remember it, the Wimbledon movie.
I remember it really well, yeah.
Now, Paul Bettany was the male actor in that movie.
I like where you're going with this, Paul.
I just thought that you would have been, you know, a shoo-in for that role, mate.
Well, did you... Actually, I went. I did this bit of casting for one of the players. Yeah, and I didn't get it because actually it was one of your own.
Yeah, I know who it is. It was Peter Clark, wasn't it? Is that right?
No, was it Todd Reed? Was it Todd Reed? I have to forgive me, but it was definitely an Aussie.
Yeah, I reckon
small, right. Small guy, oh, yeah. Small Aussie, yep. Was one of the opponents.
Yeah, yeah, it was in like the quarters or something, yep.
Yeah, and the Paul Bettany lookalike, I think, I mean, there'd be someone who is on Wikipedia now, but the Paul Bettany lookalike might have been Dom Inglot.
Oh, yeah.
Dom Inglot, who's a British doubles player, yep. He was definitely a lookalike in that film. And it was, because I was here at Wimbledon, and after a couple of weeks after the championships when they were filming it, and it was really weird because you'd walk into the old court two or court three and they had thousands of these dummies sitting in the crowd because they obviously did a lot of the filming after the championships, as they did, which was unique, the filming on the first Saturday. So real live situation of Paul Bettany walking out for might have been the final. not that I'm bitter that I didn't get to be one of those opponents.
Who could forget that 47-point shot rally to win the championship?
great stuff. Hey, the other thing I want to ask you too, I was just outside the gates a little bit earlier. One thing I love here, it's a bit like when I went to do a tour of Lords and I went to Arsenal's old stadium, Highbury, going back a few years ago. And I love the fact that there's a lady outside her house who's opposite, you know, one of the gates here. She's just pruning her roses. I mean, just going about her business. You know, there's no sort of... On the other side is Wimbledon Park, but this is, I suppose, the thing about the UK. The venues here are really nestled into the neighbourhoods, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. And whoever was had the genius idea years ago of buying land around this area... And because the club own the golf course.
Yes.
And it's on a lease, and I think it's around about a 25-year lease that's left.
Yep.
And they've got sort of grand ideas what they'd like to do.
And of course, a lot of the houses around here, the players rent them, don't they, across the fortnights. A lot of people sort of, like, I'm going to get out of town, and the players come in.
Or if you're Federer, you rent two houses.
Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah, two sets of twins and the whole entourage. But that's what they love about Wimbledon, is they can actually spend 3 or 4 weeks here and feel like they're in a nice house, not staying out of a hotel. I can really sort of unpack, if you like, and spend some quality time here.
Yeah, very much so.
There you go. Boys, we might let Barry go. He's been good enough to join us for a fair chunk of this hour. Some really interesting insights.
It's lovely to be on the radio, and great to chat to you guys.
Absolutely. And you can hear Barry and the whole team. Of course, Peter McCarter has done a bit of stuff with us on SCN and does a great job on AO Radio back in Australia. He's doing some commentary over here for Live at Wimbledon Radio. So that's on the app and, of course, on the Wimbledon website as well. You can check that out throughout the night. Thank you, Barry. Really appreciate it.
I think you're very kind, guys, to not mention the football.
Oh, yeah, we weren't going to go there. No cheap shots. Maybe the second time we'll speak.
Thank you, Barry.
All the best.
Barry Cowan joining us here. Boys in the box.
Yeah, well, Brett, very interesting chat there. And, of course, any man that's been able to grace the court with the famous grass courter, of course, himself, Pete Sampras.
Greatest grass courter of all time.
Worthy of, definitely having a chat to him. Yep. Some great insights, of course.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, it's amazing. The media contention here, boys, is extremely, extremely strong.
How would you compare it compare it to the Australian Open? I mean, we look around about 1,300 media that would make the trip to Down Under for the Australian Open. Are we looking at a similar number, maybe a few more?
I'm not sure exactly how many, in terms of the TV networks, all the similar ones sort of cover the four majors. I suppose the difference here is that, I suppose if you look at what I've got as a radio rights holder, there's, and you've actually got to pay for that spot as opposed to the other Grand Slam. So to get a spot here, so they try and protect those organisations, give them a little bit of exclusivity with some of the content. So, probably the written press would be, 350 spots, I think, in the written press room. And then you've got all the radio broadcasters who are upstairs here in the different boxes. And then, obviously, all the TV networks. So, yeah, it is... It's big, boys. There's no doubt about that. And, you know, everyone's just dressed to the nines, all the sort of stewards and the ushers and the court services people. That's the thing you love about this place. It's so traditional.
Yeah, no doubt. Well, 10 minutes to midnight. And, of course, we're speaking to Brett Phillips, who is live at Wimbledon, giving us all the behind the scenes and all the colour of the famous third Grand Slam of the year. We're going to head to our next break, but as we head to it, this is what Nick Kyrgios had to say about his next opponent in Dustin Brown.
Especially on the grass, I think he just waits for this time of the year, and he's a good friend of mine as well. And, you know, when you're playing a guy against Dustin, you just hope that it's not a day where he's feeling it and he's, you know, he can't miss and he's just enjoying it, because when he's playing like that, we all know what he can do and what he's capable of, but he's a great player as well, and is exciting.
You're listening to The First Serve on 11.16 SEN. Just a very quick one off the SMS. I'm not a massive fan of tennis, but I'm really enjoying the segment that we just had before. Keep it up, boys. So thank you very much to our listener there. Of course, I'm sure he's talking about our chat that we had with Barry Cowan. So thanks very much for organising that one, Brett Phillips, as he joins us live from Wimbledon.
Yeah, good to have a chat to Barry. And keep those SMSs coming through. Look, even if you're... You know, just as a general sports fan, Sean, I reckon if you were doing a top 10 bucket list, I reckon Wimbledon, for most people, would probably be up there, even if you're not, you know, a staunch tennis fan, just to come to this venue. And
Absolutely.
That's what Barry was sort of alluding to with the non-ticket holders who, you know, mightn't be hardcore tennis fans, but just love to be part of the event and, you know, spend a few hours here. So, it's a great place. And if you haven't had a chance to go, put it on your sporting itinerary for all our... Our listeners back in Melbourne.
Yeah, no doubt, Brett. We've got to fly through the next section. So we just wanted to quickly, before we let you go, we did play the Nick Kyrgios grab going into the break and talking about his next opponent in Dustin Brown. Paul, what were your assessments of Nick Kyrgios in his first match?
Oh, I thought he was very, very good. The standard of that match was just so high, and I was just very impressed by the way he, Stepanek just couldn't keep the ball out of his strike zone, Nick, and he just looked like he expected what Stepanek was going to bring. Nothing surprised him. Obviously lost his state a little bit through that match, but I don't think it was as bad as what the press was making out.
Brett, were you pretty happy with Kyrgios's performance?
Oh, his tennis was great. Yeah, I mean, you know, the lob between the legs and just his class. I mean, he can play. We all know that. That doesn't come as a great surprise. Yeah, does he need to get a code violation every match he plays in? You know, I mean, I think he could just avoid it. I don't think a massive deal has been made about it over here. I mean, mm-hmm. he is asked about that in his press conferences, and I think he'll always be asked that. If he's going
he's
to
made a rod for his own back. There's yeah, no doubt exactly. about that. And exactly, now everything Paul. He does is going to be magnified.
So he feels like all these people are on his back and he's been singled out and been hard done by, but just avoid it, simple as that. And he can. I mean, generally speaking, though, his emotional state was good. And I love the fact
that
they know each other really well. And he was dishing out the compliments where they were deserved for Stepanek. And, yeah, what a great player, Paul. I mean, they're the sort of tennis players you love watching.
And
I
what
mean,
about...
37, court craft, skill, great competitor. I mean, he might play till he's about 40, Ruddock, the way he's going.
He could very well. And, of course, our man John Millman in five sets. We just know that he is going to fight and scrap for every point, BP.
Paul, love him.
Yep.
So the Australian media spent 5 minutes with him yesterday. It was myself, Leo Schlink, Linda Pierce, a guy from the AAP here in London who is an Aussie reporting back, and he is just a fantastic guy. I mean, you just love spending time with John Millman because he's engaging, he takes you inside his world, and it hasn't been an easy
road. So
positive. But to maybe make a third round would be a huge occasion. He's got Benoit Paire, who got through, I think, 10-8 in the fifth, two sets to one down, and he's a big chance. But no, good on Johnny, and let's hope he can just keep his ranking. Been tough for Groth, who's now going to be about 150 in the world, and have to try and qualify for the US Open. But hopefully Johnny can keep himself around sort of 50, 60 in the world.
Yeah, still a lot to talk about, of course. Brett Phillips live at Wimbledon. Brett, we're going to have to let you go, and we'll chat to you next week. All the best.
Yep. Look forward to it, boys. Have a great rest of the show. We'll be on right throughout the night. Hopefully some action will be underway in the next hour or two, hopefully.
Yeah, thanks, mate. We look forward to hearing all your updates as well during the rest of the week until we speak to you next week.
Thank you.
Paul, let's get to our ace and unforced error with 2 minutes to midnight.
Look, my unforced error of the week is simply this, Sean. The LTA, which is the governing body of English tennis, is possibly, along with us, the most well-funded federation in tennis. They have so many programs for junior development and tele-identification, it's just ridiculous. But perhaps the answer to their lack of depth behind Andy Murray was right under their noses. Perhaps it was at the Warwick Boat Club.
Ooh.
All along... and not in the sports science laboratories at Roehampton. Marcus Willis has delivered something that besides Andy Murray, they haven't been able to deliver. Some heart.
Oh, I like it. Very, very good. My ace of the week, it's a bit of a cop-out, I guess, but it has to go to Roger Federer.
Do tell.
Roger Federer, I think, with all the good that he does, of course, for the sport, but specifically with the Marcus Willis story, really giving it a little bit more traction, giving it some more legs, not just palming it off as he's another opponent, really saying, and almost a quote, that this is the biggest story and one of the biggest stories to come out of the sport, and we're very much grateful to see this. It's one of the best stories that we've seen. In 30 seconds or 20 seconds, actually, can you give us your coaching tip of the week?
Well, playing on grass, expect the rallies to be shorter. Expect your strike zone to be compromised. Shorten your swings. Look to come forward with a slice or a hop approach shot. In short, stay up on the baseline, use your legs and core, and don't give up the baseline.
Oh, love it. With 10 seconds left, we hope you've enjoyed the show. We're going to...